Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another equitable episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Peter Moore and Jim Poole. They sit down and talk with Chicago critic Tom Williams. Don't miss that interview. Also, Tom Williams will be bringing you two more audio reviews. The first one will be Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2 from Chicago Shakes. I know you want to see that show. Well, listen to the audio review first. And also, The Sweet Smell of Success, another great show that Tom's going to let you know about. And of course, as always, I will be bringing you Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of May 29th, 2006. Looking Glass will be debuting the new Chase Studio Theater with the premiere of Clay. The new 50-seat black box stage will present the show in a co-production with About Face Theater. Clay is a groundbreaking one-man musical that was written and performed by Matt Sachs in collaboration with Eric Rosen. Matt Sachs, who you may remember from TV's Law and Order, will also be performing his new comedy show Sachs and Dixon at the New York International Fringe Festival. Looking Glass will debut Clay at the debut of the new Chase Studio Theater. And personally, I can't wait. Be sure to click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. There you're going to find an interview with Rudy Hogenmiller, the artistic director of the Light Opera Works. He talks about their new season and the 26-year history from the company. Theater in Chicago writer Joe Stead provides the article that also goes into explanation of what shows Light Opera Works will be premiering this season. Don't miss this article. Click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section and check it out. A little update for everybody out there. Red Moon Theater has canceled the late night performances of their hit show, The Golden Truffle. Why did they cancel it, you ask? Well, they are going to be adding on three Saturday matinees. That's right, from June 3rd, 10th, and 17th, there will be a 3 o'clock Saturday matinee. And their new show, The Golden Truffle, is quite a show, I must add. Not only is it a full-fledged theater performance, but it also incorporates tastings of designer chocolate. Don't miss that. Well, it seems Cirque du Soleil is so popular that they have to add on more performances before the tickets have even gone on sale. That's right, Cirque du Soleil will be adding on performances from August 15th through August 20th. That is 10 additional performances of their new show, Corteo. And the tickets went on sale yesterday. You need to hurry to get to see this performance. Cirque du Soleil is a spectacle not to be missed. Well, congratulations to director David Cromer. He has been chosen to host the Non-Equity Jeff Citations on June 5th. Congratulations, David Cromer, for being chosen as the host of the Non-Equity Jeff Citations. I can't wait to see how it goes. Also, I want to give a quick shout-out to Chicago actor Mark Grapey. He just appeared on Broadway as Felix Unger this week, opposite Nathan Lane, and that is quite a feat, as many of you may know. Mark Grapey was swinging in for Matthew Broderick, who was on vacation. Congratulations, Mark Grapey. Well, the Goodman Theater has added on The Rabbit Hole, a Tony Award-nominated play by David Lindsay Abaire. The play has been added on to the season's lineup. The Goodman's Steve Scott will be directing the show, and it will play from March 10th through April 15th in 2007. Don't miss The Rabbit Hole. Also, this is a reminder for everybody out there that the deadline is June 12th to submit your plays to Speaking Ring Theatre Company's Vitality 4, their annual one-act playwriting festival. And remember, the theme of this year is rebirth. For guidelines for the submission and where you can submit them to, go to speakingringtheatre.org. That's speakingringtheatre.org. Remember, the deadline is June 12th. Don't miss this. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, and I will be here every week putting Chicago's theater news in your head. So until next time, remember, theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, by William Shakespeare. Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, directed by Barbara Gaines at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater at Navy Pier. Henry IV Parts 1 and 2 deliver epic performances worth our time. Chicago Shakespeare Theater, one of only three U.S. companies invited to perform at the year-long British Shakespeare Festival, has mounted a two-play, five-and-one-half-hour marathon staging of Henry IV Parts 1 and 2 in a limited run in Chicago that will transfer to England this July. This is a major triumph for Barbara Gaines, for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and the talented Chicago cast. Artistically, the two-play cycle is a magnificent achievement that is a testimony to the cooperation, reverence, and respect shown by veteran Chicago actors for the Bard's work. Kudos to Barbara Gaines for casting many of the loyal actors who helped her build Chicago Shakespeare Theater over the years into a world-class troupe so that they would be able to be seen at the Royal Shakespeare Company in England. Seldom will you see a stronger cast on stage than the one that deftly delivers the Bard's two-part historical saga. The two-play marathon is an epic theater experience that so totally involves one into the action of Shakespeare's historical saga that it is a rare opportunity to enjoy the depths of the world's finest playwright. Told easily and understandable through the great performances, Henry IV Parts 1 and 2 defines the pivotal period of civil strife during Henry IV's reign against the coming-of-age antics of his son Hal. Henry IV is played by David Lively, and Prince Hal is played by newcomer Jeffrey Carlson, who is a tremendous young talent. Prince Hal and his unruly sidekick, Sir John Falstaff, played once again by Greg Winkler, who certainly is well known for playing Falstaff through the many productions at Chicago Shakespeare. We witnessed the revolt by Glendower, played by John Rieger, and Douglas, played by Kevin Goodall, and Hotspur, played by the fabulous John Douglas Thompson. Hotspur is unwilling to surrender his prisoners, thus bringing the wrath of the king down upon him. These events threaten Henry's reign. Prince Hal is busy drinking and partying at the Boar's Head Tavern with the old unreformed knight Falstaff. The king holds up Hotspur's military achievement to his lax son, and Hal vows to prove he is better than Hotspur in battle. Hal eventually saves his father on the battlefield and defeats Hotspur, while Falstaff avoids death by feigning it. In part two, the king's health is failing, but the rebels don't try to attack the king without Northumberland's, which is Bruce A. Young's, support. Prince John, played by Jake Whittaker, outwits the rebels and silences the rebellion. The king gets news of his victory on his deathbed. Prince Hal becomes the king and separates from Falstaff. This epic play is so engaging as it goes through the comic scenes at the tavern with Greg Winkler's terrific Falstaff, to the powerfully dramatic battle scenes featuring David Lively as King Henry IV, to the coming-of-age bits from Jeffrey Carlson's Prince Hal. This enjoyable marathon has enough variety, enough drama, and enough stellar performances to feed the appetites of the most sophisticated Shakespeare patron. The production values, elocution of the players, and the swift pace all contributed to a most engaging epic that delivers a rare theatrical treat. Don't miss this opportunity to see such a terrific cast perform one of Shakespeare's finest epics. My rating on this show, highly recommended. It is at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. The running time is 6 hours for both parts, with a dinner break and two intermissions, one between each of the parts. The show runs through July 18th, and then it will be remounted in London at the Royal Shakespeare Theater from July 6th through the 15th. This is a testimony to terrific work by what I consider the finest theater group in Chicago. Thank you, and go see a play this week. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here is my review of Sweet Smell of Success. Sweet Smell of Success, music by Marvin Hamlisch, based on the film by Clifford Odets and Ernest Lehman. Circle Theater's Sweet Smell of Success refreshingly remount surpasses expectations. Circle Theater, under the polished craftsmanship of Kevin Belli and Bob Knuth, have resurrected several failed Broadway musicals into workable entertainment over the last few years. Their latest magical remount, Sweet Smell of Success, is a thoroughly smart and winning production that begs the question, how did this show bomb on Broadway? Using the newly altered version of this film noir musical, knock on the world of tabloid journalism of the 1940s and 50s, Sweet Smell of Success is now presented with a more consistent tone and a more even sense of its center. Kevin Belli's cast, led by the wonderful work from John Steinhagen as J.J. Hunsinger and the engaging Michael Mahler as Sidney Falco, sings and dances and makes Marvin Hamlisch's jazz-oriented score present better than written. Belli has a knack for making mediocre material into captivating shows. Sweet Smell of Success, based on the 1957 film about the evils of gossip columnists like Walter Winchell, is a look at the dirty, ambitious, and egotistical world where one powerful, manipulative man can make or break a celebrity on his radio show or through his newspaper column. When Sidney Falco, a fledging publicist, hooks up with the all-powerful J.J. Hunsinger, he finds that lying, deceiving, and raking muck is the sure path to success. Falco eventually learns that the cost of his success is his soul. John Steinhagen plays the cool, cynical JJ with a delicious combination of nastiness, charm, and vulnerability that evokes enough empathy to engage us. We await his fate. Michael Mahler plays Sidney as the charming, smiling PR agent whose ethics are questionable. Mahler's deft ability to land just the right emotional level in his songs gives Sidney the power to carry the show. Mahler's vocals are strong and true. Mahler has a bright future as a leading man. We first like Sidney, then we learn to hate his situational, immoral actions. Mahler and Steinhagen present these jaded characters nicely. The terrific ensemble work utilized to comment and underscore the action and the motivations of lead characters was amazingly effective. The terrific choreography by Kevin Belli throughout the show added much to the show, especially in the smart-haunting Dirt number and the clever vaudevillian Don't Look Now song. Kudos to the creative team and the cast for making this post-Broadway regional premiere a success that sweetly sends an entertaining odor. Don't let the failed reputation of the Broadway production keep you from seeing this worthy show. Circle Theater knows how to succeed with material like this. My rating for this show, recommended. It is Sweet Smell of Success at Circle Theater, 7300 West Madison in Forest Park. The running time is 2 hours and 30 minutes with intermission. It runs through June 25th. For more information, call 708-771-0700. That's 708-771-0700. Thank you, and remember, go see a play this week. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guests today are from one of the great little storefront theaters, Steep Theater at 3900 on Sheridan, a group of young actors who over the last few years have really done some terrific work. And they are presently mounting a production of Bang the Drum Slowly. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Peter Moore.
And I'm Jim Poole.
Okay, and Peter, tell us now, why you picked this show to do, Bang the Drum Slowly? Why this show at this time?
Well, first off, we thought it was a great script, but one of the things we've been trying to develop as a theater company is a sort of an ensemble style of working, and this script really lends itself to it. It's a huge cast. I think there's 18 people in the cast playing various roles.
And, 18 in the cast.
18 in the cast.
It's a baseball play, right?
And it's a baseball play, and looked at this about a year ago and thought, June, July in Wrigleyville, we're about two blocks north of the stadium, and it's the right time of year, and thought it's a pretty good fit at this time, and yeah, again, the script's great.
And Peter, tell us what you play.
I play Henry Wiggins, also known as Author, who's the pitcher. For those of you not familiar with the show, it's a baseball show about a third-string catcher who was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease and was given just a few months to live, and it's all about his final season and his relationship with his roommate. That's Author, the character I play, and sort of how the team grows and bonds over the course of that season.
It's kind of based on the film that De Niro played the catcher?
Actually, it was a book that was turned into a film that De Niro played the catcher, and I think it was a TV movie before that.
It was a teleplay, and Paul Newman played the role that Pete is now going to step into those shoes, Henry Wiggins. Paul Newman was in the teleplay. You know, in those, back in the early 60s, late 50s, I think it was, they used to take novels and turn them into plays for television, and they called them teleplays.
That's true. And some were good and some were...
That's right, and they tried to get it all in an hour, and you can still get the video of that. It was sponsored by Steel Workers of America, and they put out in this teleplay based on the novel, Bang the Drum Slowly.
And Jim, what do you play in this?
I play the manager, Dutch, who manages the ball club, and it's the ball club is on the road to winning the World Series. It's a fictional team, the New York Mammoths, sort of loosely based on the New York Yankees, and we're on the road to winning the World Series, and then at the same time, it looks like we might end up losing one of our catchers, and so this puts the team into a tailspin, and we wonder how we're going to deal with the fact that one of our teammates has contacted a disease that is possibly terminal.
So it's more than just a baseball play.
Yeah, actually, you know, baseball is just a small part of it, sort of the backdrop for this for the relationship.
Tell us why folks should come see the show.
Well, it's just a great tale of friendship and of people coming together around this tragedy. The team starts off the season fairly splintered. As they all learn about this disease, they rally around it, and it's a great tale about the strength of friendship and the human condition, how people rise to the occasion when faced with these sort of tragedies.
Okay. That's right. I think it's really quite interesting to see strength on stage in the form of heroes, modern-day heroes, sports heroes, in this case, baseball heroes. And yet at the same time, these baseball heroes have to come face to face with something that they can't control, death, in this case, a terminal disease. And how is it that these really strong characters are going to embrace this idea that there is something that is beyond even their ability to triumph over? What do they do in that case? And there's another layer in the play in that the baseball team players, the teammates, struggle with their relationships with each other. There's some animosity toward their race or their ethnic backgrounds. And that comes to play early on, and it starts to affect the way in which they're playing the game, and they start losing some games, and they're not on the right trail to win the World Series.
So it sounds like it's a refreshingly good take on drama rather than the cliches that are in so many of the baseball films that have been out there.
Oh, yeah. It's been heralded as one of the most greatest baseball stories ever. It was based on the second of a series of four novels that were put out by Mark Harris. The first novel was called Southpaw, and in it, it was the first time we get introduced to this character, Henry Wiggins. And then by the second novel, his nickname is Author, because he's written this novel about baseball. And so there's a little interlacing within the play.
Oh, okay.
A lot of nicknames happen in this play.
So that's
well.
How you get to know the characters.
That's right.
Are there funny scenes in the show too?
Oh yeah, it's amazing that really this topic that could be very, you know, morose and heavy is peppered with a lot of levity throughout the story, and people are the players are able to take this topic in that they're one of their teammates is on the road to a terminal disease most likely, and yet they're able to look it in the face and still have some levity about their lives and about the race to the World Series.
Okay, now Peter, you're playing the one of the lead characters, right? The pitcher.
That's right.
So tell us about he's Author.
Yeah, Author. He's Jim said he wrote the first book, Southpaw, and these four books, Bang the Drum being the second, are all written from his perspective. So the character I'm playing is it's a memory play, basically. He's talking to the audience, telling them the story of the season. So it's a neat little part. It's interesting. So it jumps back from present day when he's telling the story back to the season before, walking through just how the team comes together. And he's kind of an interesting character because of the first book, he's a real hotshot left-handed pitcher, probably the best pitcher in baseball, and kind of a little cocky. And then this whole tragedy sort of brings out some humanity in him. And
so it's a change of pace for you, because lately in some of the shows you've been playing kind of the villains.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of villains, and I've been like, yeah, this is a little different for me. A little cocky character. I got beat up the last couple of times, and I beat some people up before. This one's more of a straightforward.
And Jim, you usually end up playing some of the heavies in some of the shows, right?
I think sometimes they've stereotyped me here at Steep Theater with the authoritarian type role. So here I am playing a manager in Catch-22. I was Colonel Cathcart.
That's right.
You know, so any time that there's somebody that comes in with some kind of commanding presence, I get that role.
Well, that's just not like, so bad.
Just like in the company itself.
Yeah, I pretty much tell people what to do and where to go and what to clean up.
Well, that makes your job easy. So let's talk about Steep Theater. Now, Peter, I know you're one of the founding members, right?
That's right. Alex Gilmore, who is not here, but he and I and another guy, Alex Gualdino, founded the company back in 2000. Our first show was in 2001. And we've slowly grown and collected new members along the way. We're up to, I think, 12 members right now. But yeah, our first show was Life During Wartime in March of 2001, a Keith Redeen play. And then our second play was sort of our coming out party. It was sort of our first big hit was Search and Destroy by Howard Korter, which was at the Chopin Theater back in August of 2001. But we've been around for 5 years now. We've produced over 20 plays, and we've been in the storefront in Wrigleyville since May of 2003. So it's been 3 years here.
Well, that's great. I know that was a struggle, right? You guys opened up right around the time when the city was was given all those contradictory rules and regs. I know you guys got caught up in that.
Yeah, we got one show under a belt, and then they showed up with the cease and desist order in hand. It was right after all those the national tragedies with E2 and that nightclub in Rhode Island. So they were rightfully so cracking down on some theaters without the proper licensing. We were in the process of getting the licensing at the time, and it took a little while, so we were shut down for about 8 or 9 months. We were opening a show. It was the day we were open was when they showed up, so we did that run.
Wow.
That was below the belt in the hothouse.
Tell us some of the best plays that you're proudest of, and some of your award-winning, because you guys have won a few awards.
Well, Search and Destroy was our first big hit, and then I think probably if there's some landmark productions along the way, sort of how we jumped up. I think Dealer's Choice was probably our next. Aspen District Code actually was probably our next one.
That's the first one of you guys that I saw. I thought that was absolutely dynamite.
That was a lot of fun. Yes. We were actually tossing around the idea of reproducing that one because we didn't think a lot of people got a chance to see it.
Good idea. Yeah. I'd be there.
Yeah, yeah. So that sort of raised our profile, and that was the last show we did before we moved in here. So that sort of got the ball rolling. And then Hot House and Below the Belt both were some pretty big critical successes and crowd pleasers. But then Dealer's Choice is, I think, when we really sprung up to the next level. And that was one I was particularly proud of. That was, I think, Jim's first show as a company member. He'd done three or four before that. Last year, 2005, was just a great year. We did Incident at Vichy, which was, to date, to that time, our biggest seller, and we just got tons of great reviews, and then followed up with Book of Days, and that, too, got a lot of great reviews. And last year was our first year of Jeff eligibility, and we got two nominations this year. So we got it for Best Ensemble and Best Leading Actress for Krista Forster. So
coming up
for so I
guess so you still don't know what's happening until
until 2 weeks,
June 5th.
So
it's our first good luck to you. I got a good feeling.
Yeah, well, it's
just getting nominated though is really a victory.
Yeah, we were excited when we got recommended, and then when we got nominated, that was sort of way more than we expected. So whatever happens, and it'll be fun just to go hang out and.
So, Jim, you're a veteran actor. What made you get with these younger guys?
I'm not a founding member of STEEP, but I like to call myself a founding friend because I met Pete Moore back at the School of Steppenwolf. We were both there together. I think it was in 99 or 2000. 99, okay.
Well, that says a lot because that's a tough one to get.
Yeah, it was a real good program, and it was great to meet some other actors from around the country as well as Chicago. And then when Pete and a couple of these other guys got together to put on that first play, it's, as you start any new adventure, you're going to have some stutter steps. And I think that first play, they were on schedule, and then they got sidetracked. And so when they redid it, I wasn't able to be a part of that one. So that's why I didn't get in on the ground floor. But
were there in spirit.
I was there in spirit. I was asked and everything, and I like to bring that up and put that up there as much as possible.
Okay, we'll get the record straight.
So anyway, I've just really enjoyed what we do here. I think we've got a real nice thing going here as far as storefront theater in Chicago, and I think we're slowly making our mark. You know, we're in our fifth season and celebrating our fifth anniversary.
Well, you guys still remind me of Steppenwolf when they were starting out.
Yeah, well,
which
that's
is good
real
company
nice
to be
of you
in.
To say.
Yeah.
That's nice of you to
say.
Yeah,
that's strong company.
We definitely have kind of a muscular approach to the theater. You know, when we did Catch 22, there was a lot. I don't know if there was 18, but there was roughly around. There was a lot of
ensemble. Yes, there was
a lot of in and out, and a lot of pushing people around, and yet really trying to tell the story well. Mm-hmm. And I think that was also another. I would mark that as doing something that was probably one of the most complex plays we've ever done.
And that is a very that's a very tough play to mark.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you guys did a terrific job with that. Yeah.
We're proud of the work that we've done and what we've accomplished, and we're looking forward to the next season as well.
Well, let me ask you this. You guys experimented with doing off days, doing like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and rather than weekends, and maybe doing some rentals on weekends, which is probably a good survival mechanism. How did you guys draw on those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday
shows? Great for a long time. We found that part of the decision was fiscal. It was easier to rent the space out on the weekend, and we were still getting out of that hole from being shut down for 8 or 9 months. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you get the competition's not as hot for there's not as many shows going on.
That's true.
And also a lot of people involved in theater, they're usually free on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we had good crowds. Dealer's Choice was an off night show, and we were packed pretty much every night. I think we had.
And I think other performers would be able to come on these off nights, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so we got to become a favorite among a lot of other performers. And now, though, you're not Jeff eligible when you're performing on off nights. And so it's a move for us to try to get out of the financial hole that we were in, put shows on the weekends, become Jeff eligible, and hopefully get nominated again.
But you could also mount some shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and see how they go, and then later put them on weekends too. Isn't that an option for you?
Yeah, that's an option. Yeah, moving forward, I think at least the next couple of shows are slated for the weekends, but I don't think we're adverse to necessarily not doing another off-night show again. We sort of, however the schedule comes at it, we're flexible, and I don't think it really affects us either way, whether...
Well, actually, some of the newer theater companies ought to even consider that and contact you guys, right? If it's available Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 I think, you know, it's pretty reasonable rent. And when we were starting off, the off nights were great because it kept production costs low. And then we got to reach out to a wider audience of theater industry people.
Well, there's money spends too, right?
Yeah, it sure does.
But let's get back to Bang the Drum Slowly. You are now Jeff eligible for this, right?
That's right.
And you're going to be opening on Thursday the 25th.
Right. Thursday the 25th we open. We run Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. Theater's at 3902 North Sheridan. And it runs for 6 weeks until July 1st, I believe. The Saturday, July 1st, we close.
Do you recommend they call in advance for reservations?
Yeah.
Or what's
the
number?
It's 312-458-0722 is our box office voicemail, and it's not a huge theater, so if you'd like to come and see it,
they can go to the website also, right?
Yeah, you can make reservations through the website, I believe. I'm not too internet savvy, but they do it that way.
Jim is nodding yes. They can.
Yes, you can make reservations by going to the website and then calling the number. The best thing is probably to call the
312-458-0722.
Okay, great. Now, let's talk about your guys' background. Jim, let's start with you.
All right.
Okay, tell us your background and what got you to where you, to being the manager in Bang the Drum Slowly.
Well, you know, I've been involved in theater ever since high school. I was in high school plays, and then after that, I was doing summer stock. I did three seasons of summer stock theater at in a small town in Indiana, Frankfort, Indiana, with the Red Barn Summer Theater.
Oh, I'm familiar with them. Yeah, that's a nice credential.
It's a good training ground, I think, to see what it's like to perform professionally in consecutive weeks. And you're performing at the night and you're rehearsing during the afternoons for the next show. And so it's a real good training ground for you. And then after that, I moved to Chicago. And I've been in the Chicago scene, sort of in and out of it, for a number of years. I was a part of a new church in Chicago, and I was the artistic director for the church. And so a lot of my day job in organizing some of the theatrical and performing arts in that church took me away from being a part of the theater. But I tried to do a play a year for about 10 years.
Okay. And what are some of the groups you've performed with, or some of the...
Well, I was actually one of the first groups I was with was actually in Milwaukee. It was Acacia Theater, and I did Tally's Folly. Okay. Up there. And then about 2 years ago, I was in the theatrical pneumaticals production of Peer Gynt. And so that was kind of a fun...
That's a good show.
That's right. In the Actors Workshop, I did a play, Arthur Miller play, The Last Yankee. Yeah, so it's been a real good run. I haven't been on any of the big houses, but I've really enjoyed getting in and among a lot of the different theaters around the town.
Okay, Peter, give us your background.
I too have been doing theater since high school. I went to college out back east in Maine, a small school called Bowdoin College, and didn't go there with any inclination to go into theater afterwards. And in fact, they didn't have a theater major, but did as much work there as I could and decided that this is what I wanted to make a career of it, and then moved out to Chicago and did a couple shows, nothing spectacular, but then quickly got into the school of Steppenwolf. And that was a big life-changing thing for me, I think.
A lot of people don't realize how hard that is. It's what do they take, like, a small number of students. I think it's like a dozen or so, and they have thousands of people applying.
Yeah, so people apply from all over the country. I think there was 20 people in our class, and there's, you know, 10 people from Chicago and 5 from LA, 5 from New York. And I was really young at the time, and it was a 10-week program. It was just a great environment to work. I think I made a lot of growth, and that was sort of what inspired me to find people to form this company with, because I think the most important thing about becoming a better actor is working all the time, and also working with people you're comfortable with. Because for at least for me, allows me to take bigger chances. And
so Steppenwolf, in more ways than one, became a model for you guys. Then, right?
Yeah. The sort of the ensemble work ethic they had was something that intrigued me, and I met a lot of great people there, like Jim. And Alex Gualino, who was one of the other founding company members, was at the school, and we do a bunch of shows with kids from the school too. Sergi Bosk, who's in this show, Bang the Drum, he was in our class, and he's done a couple shows with us, and it's been great. And so I've been just basically doing Steep since we found it. So
well, that's good. And there's enough roles doing ensemble work where you really don't need to go out in other places because you're pretty much working all the time.
Yeah, keep pretty busy. In fact, don't have too much time off.
I'm sure you wouldn't turn down if Steppenwolf called you though. For one of those.
No,
you might consider
that.
They
call me all the time, Tom. I would. I mean, I
sure.
Yeah, I like working here, but I'll always keep my eyes out for other opportunities.
All right. How do you guys go about selecting a play? Give us that process. I've heard every group does it differently. Some of the artistic directors, have an iron fist in whatever they pick, they do. And sometimes it's a vote. And, tell us what your process is.
We don't have an artistic director. We tried it for a little while and made a conscious decision not to do that. So we select plays as an ensemble. All the members are invited to submit two plays every reading cycle. So, there's 16 plays. We all read them. Then we sit around for a few hours and hash it out. And it's a long, angry meeting, but eventually we come to some agreement, and we select plays as a group, and I think that's part of our success, is it keeps a lot of different voices involved.
I think typically what happens is in the selection process, all of the ensemble members have some kind of connection internally with the story that's being told, and so what they do is they submit that and present it before the others and say, hey, I really have a strong connection with this one. This is why I think we should do it, and this is why it would be good for the company. I see a couple of roles for company members. I see a way for us to expand and allow some friends from outside of the company to participate in this particular play. So we make a pitch for it. And really, our play selection is, I would say, we look back over the past couple of years and we'd say the play selection comes from who we are as people, as a collective group.
Well, that's one of the things I admire about you guys is the play selection. And it's funny how a couple of your hits, Shattered Globe ended up producing after you guys. I don't know if they were following you or
I don't know. What's... Shattered Globe did one. Raven did Book of Days.
Yeah.
Sometimes we might say, what's the big idea here following us here?
But that's terrific. And both plays, I've seen your production and the other productions, and I like them both. They both hit, and they both worked.
Yeah.
But that's a compliment to the knowing that you guys are picking some terrific plays when the larger houses, or like in Shattered Globe's case, an equity company that's been around a long time, sees the merit in those shows. But you guys are scooping them, which is cool.
And I went and saw Dealer's Choice at Shattered Globe, and I thought it was an excellent production. I thought they did a great job. But it was interesting that I think, the 2 or 3 years prior to that, when we did our production, it took a little bit different slant to it. And I think we gave it our own sort of personal approach to that play, and so I was proud of what our work was for on that play as well.
Yeah, and I think people who saw yours and saw Shattered Globe could enjoy both of them as I did, and that's good because it's you got to put your own stamp on a play.
That's right.
So now tell us what kind of stamp you guys are putting on Bang the Drum Slowly. How different is this going to be from the film that a lot of people know?
Well, the film is a little bit different than the play. Eric Simonson, from who's an Steppenwolf ensemble member, did the adaptation from the novel, and I think he probably borrowed some things from the film. And they did it in '92, I believe, at the Next Theater up there in Evanston, Skokie area, and so. He adapted that the script, and the script doesn't follow along with the film that closely. So it's own entity.
Well, that's good. And how long does the show?
It's a 2-hour runtime with intermission.
2 hours with intermission. That's a good time.
Oh yeah,
for a show. And give us the in the interest of time here, give us a little plug for the show.
Okay, yeah, they can come out and see it. It runs through Thursday through Saturday, starting this Thursday, the 25th of May, and goes to July 1st at 8 o'clock. And they can call this number
312-458-0722.
Tickets.
Okay, it sounds good. I can't wait to see the show, and good luck to you guys. And I'm sure the show will be as good as a lot of the shows you've done. And the body of work that Steep Theater has produced is enough for me to recommend the show before seeing it. There are a few theater companies that their quality is such that just go to the show. And by the way, you might ask them what the play is. But you'll see a top-notch theater.
Well,
thanks, guys.
We appreciate it, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having us on.
Oh, no problem. Thanks. This is Tom Williams saying go see a play this week. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chicago, for listening to this equitable episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote has to deal with jokes, and quite fittingly comes from Henry IV, Part 1, Act 2, Scene 2. It would be argument for a week, laughter for a month, and a good jest forever. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. Until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.